Healthy Start Laytonville and Youth Speaks Out presents Marijuana and the Adolescent Brain 2014, Further Adventures with Ralph Cantor. Ralph is a drug counselor and educator from Berkeley who returned to Mendocino County to teach at Laytonville High School and hold a community forum. This is part two of a two-hour presentation. This program is available to stream or download at our website, youthspeaksout.net, and is free to rebroadcast upon notification. I am Dan Roberts, producer of this project, funded by Laytonville Healthy Start Coalition's Drug-Free Communities Project and the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Through our organization and coalition, we are working toward reducing youth substance abuse through a variety of strategies in the Laytonville community.
Kids today in every one of the classes were incredible listeners. I mean, I didn't have any discipline. I didn't have any of that. They're all sitting there. Like now, some of them, and I really didn't know what was going on in their minds, so who knows whether or not, you know. But they were interested. People want to, I want to understand a little bit about this drug. And we got to do that. I think you have to do that as a community now, because this weed's been around a long time. We need to begin to separate stuff out. And I think it has, I don't want to go into the medicinal value, but boy, does it have an impact on teenagers. And for the most part, the world at large doesn't see that. The whole marijuana movement, I think, is a very positive movement. But in that, most of them really aren't connected that much with teenagers. And I'll say one more thing about it. Mostly what I work with is high-risk teenagers. And so you go into these continuation schools in Oakland or San Francisco, and you see what kind of impact this weed has. Here are kids that are kind of marginalized in the first place, trying to figure out how they're going to get through life. And here's this weed all over the place, okay? And this ends up satisfying all the stuff for the short period of time, and the kids end up with nothing. Without a skill to where my pleasure is, without a skill to understand what my interests are, without a skill to be excited by life, or it's this. And it gets hardwired in from 12 to 17. If we could just have them hold off, let this brain start to develop and figure this stuff out, 18, 19, 20, it's a different ball game, okay? And it's not that we're going to stop kids from experimenting. They're going to be interested. But if we can really get a message that this is not simple, okay, particularly for kids, and we really give that message, I think it will make a difference. And I think it's important for us to separate it out. And you know something? The wine industry, I think, has. In the you go to Napa or Sonoma, and you have a person that's growing wine. That person, I don't think, feels hypocritical to tell their 15-year-old, I don't want you to drink. You know, it's not appropriate for you to be drinking at this point. It's, you know, even though I'm growing grapes, okay? Later on, and so in some ways, even though adults in this community are growing marijuana or smoking marijuana, doesn't mean that it compromises them to be able to say to the kid, I don't want you to smoke now. Just like the alcohol. I don't want you to drink now. It doesn't mean that they won't. But believe me, as a teacher, I know that it puts the brakes on things. It's got them looking over their shoulder. They got a message now, okay? They need a message at this point, at least something to bounce off of. Because right now, they're not getting anything at all, except it's all good, man, and it's open territory. There are basically three kinds of drugs that get you high. Uppers, downers, and all-arounders. Drugs that fire off dopamine in the brain and speed you up, like methamphetamine or cocaine, so you get a lot of energy and it's firing off the dopamine. Downers, drugs that go to your brain and fire off dopamine but slow you down, like heroin. Or like painkillers or sleeping pills. You have all the dopamine, but you get real slowed down, okay? The third kind of drug is an all-arounder, is a hallucinogenic, like mushrooms, LSD, a drug called salvia that kids have, another one called DMT. There's a number of them, MDMA, which is ecstasy or Molly. And get this, THC is an all-arounder. THC is a psychedelic. THC is a hallucinogenic. The thing about it is, you can't smoke enough to trip. You can't smoke enough to hallucinate for the most part. You can just smoke pipeful after pipeful. After a while, the brain just gets saturated with it, and you just don't get any higher, but you're not going to overdose. You can just, right, and it just kind of, that's it, okay? However, if it's put into an edible where you basically heat it up and put the THC into butter, and you put it in a cookie or a brownie or in some way or other make it an edible, then it doesn't go, see, with your lungs, it gets up to your brain in about 5 minutes. It's a done deal. Eating it, it takes about, it's got to go through your entire digestive system, then out your intestines, then into your blood, then up to your brain. It takes about 45 minutes to an hour to come on. But when it comes on, your brain will absorb all the THC that's in that cookie or brownie. I don't know why it's the case that here, smoking it, you know, you just kind of get to a certain place, but eating it, it'll take in all the THC that's in that cookie or brownie. And if there's enough THC in that edible, they're going to trip. It isn't like smoking weed anymore. It's like taking LSD. And it's a tricky thing, the tripping thing. The hallucinations are kind of just the wall or the floor getting a little wave through it. But the internal hallucination is kind of separating from yourself. It's a bit of a schizophrenic experience. Oh, look at Ralph over here. I'm with God or the ozone. You know, here's Ralph. Wow. Ralph's a man. Ralph's a teacher. Ralph's a father. Check out Ralph. It can be a very interesting experience tripping. If it goes bad, what happens is I go, oh, my God, am I going to come back to being Ralph? Because right now I'm out of my bird here. Am I going to come out of this? Because right now I'm crazy. And you get scared. And you go, boy, I don't like the floor doing that and the wall doing that. I wish it would stop. And as you get scared on a trip, it makes your heart beat faster and you just get more scared. And you can get to the point where you go, oh, my God, is Ralph dying here? So it can really be, it can be very interesting. And the next time around, the same drug, the same everything, the setting in your head or the environment is different, and it can go to this other place. And it's not a 2 or 3 or 4 hour high. Eating is a 6 to 8 to 10 hour high. So there's a big difference. And some of the kids knew about edibles and knew there was a difference, but a lot don't. And I'll tell you, that's one of the real big things that's happening around here now is edibles. 1 minute on alcohol. But important. I think the alcohol industry has really got us. Because what the alcohol industry says is we don't want anybody drinking or driving. Because drinking and driving can get you killed. It's bad. Nobody drink or drive, and we're going to give you that message. We just want everybody to drink responsibly. Okay? Nobody drink or drive. First of all, I don't think that adolescents drink responsibly. You know, they just don't. Their kids don't have a glass of Cabernet. It's a different ball game, okay? And what alcohol is a downer, basically. And the kind of downer that it is it's, I think of it as an anesthetic. You drink a few drinks of alcohol, and it puts the outer layer of your brain to sleep. And you put that outer layer of your brain to sleep, and you're looser. You're not so uptight. You don't have all these inhibitions and everything, okay? You drink a little more alcohol. It puts a deeper layer to sleep. And now you don't walk so well or talk so well. You drink a little bit more alcohol, and you can die. From a downer, you can die. Because if you put this layer of your brain to sleep, well, then what's telling your heart to beat? And what's usually what happens in here, in between here and here, is you throw up. And it's your body's way of kind of preventing you from overdosing on alcohol. But this idea of putting these layers of the brain to sleep and allowing inhibitions to come out more is very dangerous with teenagers. What concerns me about teenagers and alcohol, number one, is the way they treat one another. It's the demeaning behaviors that go on. I want to say something. Here you got a guy who you begin to put these outer layers to sleep, and he's got this testosterone. It makes it a little easier to act it out. And for a girl, I think it can make girls much more vulnerable. So it can create a predator-prey situation that I think alcohol can do this, and also I'm concerned about ecstasy. doing that kind of same thing. So I'm more concerned around date rape and that kind of stuff and how people treat one another than getting behind the wheel of a car, although certainly that's a concern. The other thing I want to say about alcohol is kids drink more than adults. You know what one of the drugs of choice is in the Bay Area? It's a 40. And what a 40 is a 40-ounce bottle of high alcoholic content beer, like Schlitz Malt Liquor or one of those guys, right? And it's high alcohol. So instead of being 5 or 6% alcohol, it's 10 or 12% alcohol. And a can of beer is 12 ounces. So it's about 3.5 cans of high alcoholic content beer. It is not uncommon for kids to knock off a couple of 40s. I don't know about you, but if I drank 3.5 beer is high alcohol, I'd know it, man. Kids will drink a few 40s. They don't realize that they're as drunk as they are. It's a very interesting thing. Are adolescents more susceptible to alcohol than adults? Number one, they have a reduced sensitivity to intoxication. They don't realize that they are as intoxicated as they are. Number two, an increased sensitivity to social. What that means simply is they are more likely to put the lampshade on their head and dance around than somebody else. Their inhibitions go more down than it does for an adult. Third thing, they're not thinking. They're already not up in the in that frontal cortex. Now, with alcohol in it, they're not thinking at all. Okay, and so is it different for kids? Absolutely. Have you ever seen a group of drunken teenagers? That's something to see. I want to teach people about addiction, or at least the way I see addiction. Because that's another one. You can be addicted to running. You can be addicted to whatever. What is addiction? Here's what addiction is. This is the thinking part of the brain. This is this nucleus accumbens that fires off dopamine. Now, let's say you're a kid and you want to smoke some marijuana. This is not an easy thing to do, right? First of all, you got to figure out where you're going to get it from. Maybe here it's a little bit easier than other places, but you still got to figure out where you're going to get it. Then you got to figure out how you're going to pay for it. You got to get some money for it. Then after you get it and you buy it and you look at it, you go, God, how are we going to smoke this thing? Do you smoke it? Do you eat it? What do you do? Roll it up into a cigarette? Well, then we may need a grinder, or do you smoke it out of a pipe? We'll have to buy a bong. What's a bong? And whatever it is, you got to find the equipment for it. Then once you do all that stuff, then you got to figure out where you're going to smoke it. You can't just smoke it. It's quite a lot of thinking that goes on in order to get the drug into your brain, to this nucleus accumbens, so that it fires off some dopamine and the brain says, oh, yes, thank you very much. I got my reward, okay? Person does it again and again and again and again. I don't know if you've ever seen this movie, Little Shop of Horrors. It's about a plant that they feed blood to, you know what I mean? And after a while, the plant goes, gimme, gimme. What happens here is this guy, gimme, gimme. And it starts to tell this part of the brain what to do. And so you start to, and here's where the addiction piece comes in, is if this part of the brain says, no, I got to stop doing it, I don't want to do it, and this part of the brain says, just shut up and do it because I want it. That's the addiction. It's when the brain, it's like me with cigarettes, taking out a cigarette, lighting it up, taking an inhale and going, man, I got to quit smoking cigarettes. You ever see anybody? What that is this part of the brain telling this part of the brain, just shut the hell up and give me the cigarette because I want the cigarette. And so what addiction is when the thinking part of the brain says, this not good now. And this part of the brain says, I don't care. Give me the drug. That's addiction. It's not nothing. It's continue, and it's a crazy thing because the definition, in my opinion, is to continue to use despite adverse consequences. Why would somebody continue to beat themselves over the head? Doesn't that hurt? Why would you look at it from the outside and you wonder, why would somebody do that and get this. You're sitting there with this crack pipe and why? Just stop doing it, okay? The reason that they can't is that the biology has changed. And the biology is running the show, and it's very strong. The biology is saying, I want it. This is what addiction is. And can this happen with marijuana? Yes. Yeah. Can it happen with alcohol? Yeah. Not everybody gets addicted, but can it happen with alcohol? And it happens. Can it happen with marijuana? Yeah, and it looks like about 1 in 5, 1 in 6 really become addicts. And what an addict is, I hate to use that word, but what it is you're continuing to use despite this brain saying don't. I got kids that come out of juvenile hall and they got to take a UA test with their probation officer, and if they fail the UA test, they're back in jail, and they're asking me, how can I fool the UA test? Because I'm not going to give up my weed. So I got to figure out what else I'm going to do in order to do that. That's addiction, and even at a young age. Thought or a comment or something about what happened to me today working with the kids in school or anything. Yeah.
What do you say to a kid who's tried it, or maybe they're 16? Well, they're 15 or 16 years old. They've been trying marijuana.
So they've already been experimenting.
They've already been experimenting. Right. Maybe they're even the type of kid that's been using. Maybe they're using for 3 months straight, like that a kid you're talking about.
So right now they really got it.
And now they're worried about their brains. What would you say to them? What's like the next step for even though they're 15, 16?
Well, first thing I want to say is, oh boy, they're worried about their brains. I'm dead serious. In this field of change, us people that work as counselors or therapists, there's a thing called stages of change. And what stages of change are, what the heck happened? What stages of change are is, number one, the pre-contemplative stage. Pre-contemplative meaning that they're not even thinking about it. No problem. Okay? The next stage is the contemplative stage. And that's what I was hoping to bring people to at this thing, is I want you to start thinking about it. And so part of what you're saying, what I say here, contemplative, I don't even know. The next step from here is, okay, do you think you want to make a change? You know, if you're concerned about this and you're worried about this, do you think you want to make a change? Okay? Because the next stage, after contemplating it and saying, yeah, it's a problem here, I think I do want to make a change, then the next step towards change is making a plan. Okay? And I'll finish it, but that's where we want to go here. The next stage after making a plan is acting the plan out, and then the next stage is maintenance. And let me tell you, in change, really, it's all about maintenance. It's all about trying to figure out how to live without the drug, okay? But we got to work our way up there. So at this point, first of all, I would just open it up in conversation. And I'll tell you some conversation that's valuable for me on this. What do you like about the drug? And have the kid really talk about what they're getting from the weed. And that becomes really important for them to look at it and sort it out. And if they want to do something about it, then I have some things to work. Oh, okay. Well, one of the things is I really like it to help me go to sleep, you know. Or I really like it when I'm hanging out with my friends. Or I really like it when I'm stressed or whatever. And so you begin to make a plan as to how you're going to get through it. Now, what that plan looks like, it's hard. It's not simple, okay. Once that stuff is hardwired in, and you got a brain that's this way with this biology this way, it's tough, okay? Some of what I really suggest is exercise. But I'll tell you what's tough is, let's say this kid says, I want to try to stop for a while, okay? And by the way, that's what I suggest in any of these dialogues where kids say, I'm not addicted, or it doesn't do anything, or it's not that big a deal. Okay, stop for a while. Let's see. The only way we're going to be able to see what your connection is you just stop for a while. Don't smoke for a week, you know. And then you begin to sort it out. The biggest problem, though, is that for a high schooler, coming to high school is like coming to a bar. If, as an adult, if you want to not smoke weed or you want to stop drinking, you can kind of create a life for yourself where it's not around. But the kids can't. It's part of their community. It's part of everything there. So every day they're stepping in there and it's right in front of their face. So it's more difficult for kids to not smoke. I really, you know, empathize with them. And I want to say that I didn't see the marijuana smoking here as being off the page from what I was reading from the kids. I see more marijuana smoking at Berkeley High than I do at Laytonville High. I think it would be useful to use a California Healthy Kids Survey or something to be able to test it, but I'll bet you that it's even more there than it is here. But part of it is we need to make a plan on this stuff, and we figure it out, and there's a lot of talking that goes on. And then it kind of goes, and then give it a shot. Try to stop for a week. Let's see, and let's see what we can do. This is the way, and then finally to get to a place of how do I maintain it. But it's very difficult. And the thing about marijuana is that it stays in your system so long that you don't feel the withdrawal right away. It takes a while. But once it starts to get out of your system, and what the withdrawal feels like, number one, is you feel like, boy, I'd like to get high now. And here at the school, they probably say, who can smoke me up here at school because I feel like getting high? Some of the other is irritability. You know, you get kind of, you can get sweats on this stuff. And with the potency of the marijuana today, God knows how deep this stuff goes. And I don't think people really understand rehab or detox for marijuana. They understand it for alcohol, but this whole thing with marijuana, but some people, well, it isn't even addictive. I don't understand what the problem, you know. In the Bay Area, we have MA, Marijuana Anonymous, 7 days a week. There is no marijuana. They may have Narcotics Anonymous or Alcoholics Anonymous, but there is no marijuana. Does nobody have a problem up here with marijuana? What's the story here? You know, it's like there's a way in which I've had people come up to me and say, listen, my husband's getting stoned all the time, and it's really interfering in our relationship. And I tell him that I wish you could stop smoking because I feel like you're not there. And then he says to me, what are you talking about? I'm standing right here. I'm listening to every word you say. I'll give you back every word you say. What's the problem here? And some of the research that they do on marijuana is they look at people's, what do they call them, electroencephalographs, where you see, you know, the brainwave patterns. And what happens normally when people connect with one another, even though their brainwave patterns are this, they begin to get into a bit of a sync, okay? And you can kind of feel it, and you can see it on this machine. Well, if somebody's high on weed, they don't hook in. They stay in that place. So the wife is kind of saying, I know you're hearing every word, but I just don't feel like you're here. And the guy's saying, yeah, that's a problem, you know? And that's a whole other issue for the adult community that you guys need to figure out on your own. But what you also need to figure out is what message are you giving kids as a community here? It's necessary, and I think you need to back the school up. And I met Tim, is the new principal here for today. A cool guy, you know. Now's the time to be able to create at least some kind of environment here that says marijuana is not all good. There are issues with it. You take marijuana and you change the brain. Do you understand that? Marijuana, the brain, something that, you know, these are kinds of things that need to come across here. Kids need to get some messages about this. And my biggest message as a teacher is that marijuana interferes with learning and interferes with that development to find out where my juice and my energy is. My biggest message for the kids was get a life. Find out what makes you feel alive and work and whatever. Yeah.
Wondering why you choose to not share the piece that I've been done quite a bit of. I'm also a teacher. I teach alcohol and other drug prevention, all that kind of.
Yes.
I'm always very, very upfront with them about the fact that their frontal lobe isn't as developed, and I'm breaking it all down. I'm just curious, why do you feel like it's demeaning when it's simply explaining the facts? And I feel like I get a lot of really interesting dialogue out of the kids when I'm talking and being really honest with them about the biology and the development of their brain. Like, oh, that's why I have a hard time thinking, because sometimes I'm not.
Right. But yes. The reason I don't do it, though, is that really your prefrontal cortex isn't developed that far. You don't have the sophistication to smoke weed at this point. Do you understand that? Oh, yeah, right. I don't have this. What, are you kidding me? What I find is that kids say, what do you think? I don't think. I don't have any judgment or whatever. So to me, we're all trying to figure out, you know, how to work with kids in this. To me, yeah, you're welcome. To me, I don't get traction with that one. So I don't use it, and I understand why you do. But for me, it just seems like the kids don't want to hear that very much. And I'm not sure what you're saying is me telling them that they're not up there helps them to understand why they can't handle the drug in some way, I guess. I
do hear what you're saying, and I also tend to distinguish that some people do have, and I've noticed that some people do have the ability, you know, you'll meet some 14-year-old who has an amazing empathetic capacity and is able to communicate and listen and all these kinds of things that we have varying capacities. It's just that this is what's happening for your brain. So I appreciate what you're saying. I was curious about it. I hit the
other part about the developing brain, though. That's the place that I go on this stuff. But not on that other thing. And your point's well taken, too.
You're saying they don't have the sophistication to understand that they don't have the sophistication.
That's another way. Yeah. Well, one way or another. And that's not true for everybody. You know, and like you said, my main thing, by the way, and I want to say this for parents also, is, and this is a very interesting piece here. So here's the thinking part of the brain. Here's this whole limbic part of the brain. You got a guy like David Brooks. David Brooks is a political wonk. He's a writer for the New York Times. You may have seen him on PBS's Brooks and Shields sometimes. And he's quite an intellectual guy. He wrote a book about 3 years ago called The Social Animal. And basically what he said was, people don't vote for the president here. People vote for the president here, in this limbic, from this gut place as opposed to from this intellectual place. And what he said was, we are underrating the power of this limbic brain in how it influences us. And part of what I think when I'm teaching kids, it may seem like I'm talking to here, but this is the place that I want to go. And so that's my biggest concern, is how do I get them in their gut so they're thinking about it a bit? That's why I kind of eliminate some of the stuff. And for some people, I've gotten criticized, and I understand it, for being too positive about marijuana. I stopped teaching middle school because I'd have middle school parents that would call me up that night and say, what the hell did you tell my kid? You told my kid that they eat an apple, that they smoke marijuana and they eat an apple and it might make them feel better, or it might make the apple taste better. I don't want my kid to know that. You told my kid that they smoke marijuana, it might fire off dopamine in their head and make them feel good. I don't want my kid to know that. I stopped teaching middle school here. I want to do drug education. And what's interesting is, years back, when I was teaching and we were doing sex education, we were kind of dancing around stuff until HIV came along. And after HIV, now, sex education, you see these little eighth grade girls with dildos, penises, and trying to figure out how to put a condom on a penis here. You know what I mean? Eighth or ninth grade. Because we had to stop messing around and get serious about sex because it meant life and death. Well, we haven't gotten there with drugs. Somehow or other, we're still dancing around with the drug thing here. And people, when I get a contract, it's got to say on a drug prevention education. And I say to some of these people, tell me, do you do sex prevention education? Or do you do sex education? Okay? I do drug education at this point. And in order to do that, it's very dicey. In some ways, kid says to me, what's the best way to smoke marijuana? Through a pipe, through a blunt, through a vaporizer, or through a bong? What do you do as a teacher? to answer that. You know what I do? I answer the question. I don't know what, you know, that's what the kids want, and that's a way to reach the kids. So I say to them, you know, well, what do you mean by best? Do you mean the way you get high the best? Well, that would be with a blunt, because you're mixing the nicotine with the weed. If you mean the best in terms of hurting your lungs, well, probably the vaporizer is the best, is the way to go there. And so I answer the question, but this is very dicey education that's out there, and a lot of people aren't ready for it. You're ready for it because you need it. These kids need honest, straight-up conversations about this stuff.
You are listening to Ralph Cantor at a community forum on marijuana and the adolescent brain. This was recorded in May 2014 in Laytonville, California, and is available online at youthspeaksout.net.
Yeah.
For parents that have already observed advanced stages in kids have, quote, a little bit more of a, quote, habit than they would care to acknowledge, but they have to realize, because that's what's going on, at a certain point, you might have to set the kid down and tell them that one habit is only going to be replaced by another habit. If they have a long-range plan, willing to make some sacrifices in sobriety, crack books, get a career, and it's a trade-off, and they can find some pleasure in the process, you might lay out alternatives about other habits that could replace the habit that's right. got you in its grips right now.
And that's part of when the person was asking about how does it change and what a plan is. Yeah, some of that is, it does have to be replaced. If this is where I'm getting my pleasure, and now you're taking that away from me, how long am I going to white knuckle it here? No, I can't. Eventually, you got to replace it. Okay, well then how? Where are your pleasures?
And that's a choice about the alternative habit that's going to be put in its place because you remove the other
right.
or try to abdicate the addiction.
Yeah, and the thing is that after a while, once the addiction's really there, it's not a choice anymore. You know, it's tough. It gets, and the thing about it that's so tough using it between 12 and 17 is not only does it get hardwired in, they never got any of those alternative skills. So now they're kind of skillless with this stuff, and they're going through withdrawal from not having it. So you're really starting from, you know, ground zero here or lower. Yeah, very hard place.
It's like some people come out of rehab and they don't have a job and they're panhandling and they have very little change and they're tempted to spend it in wild places.
Yeah, yeah. Or kids come out of rehab here and they come back to their high school and everybody's using. How hard, how difficult it is. But let me tell you, the earlier you get it, the better the prognosis. The longer you can delay it, the better the prognosis. The less they use on the way up. And believe me, things that you say and do have an influence. Doesn't mean you're going to stop them all the way. But is it going to slow down stuff? Is it going to create something new that's out there, a culture that says, we have concern with kids around weed? Is that going to have an effect? Definitely. And on these kids. Your kids today were very interested in me teaching the whole time. I'm up there last period in the afternoon, and I'm teaching about synaptic spaces and dopamine, and they're sitting there. They really want to know about this, and they wanted to know about the weed, okay? And some people, yeah, you know, but part of it is I have to break through the prejudice of it's all good. You know, or it's, you know, to let's just open this up and begin to talk about it. And honestly, we need a lot of sane talk about marijuana. Right now, it's nuts out there. And we don't need to have fights between the growers and this thing can work. Or at least it's going to work a lot better if we don't drag teenagers into this thing. Okay, that's they're the ones that are really getting caught in this crossfire because they don't know, they can't figure this stuff out at all. And I want to say one more that I heard that I didn't get it, but I want to share it with you because I heard it a few times today, which was that some of the kids feel like they are being looked down upon by general society because they live up here and they're in a marijuana culture. And I didn't really get that. One of the kids was saying that they were in L.A. And they said, well, where do you come from? And he said, Mendocino. Oh, you must be a stoner. You come from Mendocino. Oh, your parents must be growers. You come from Mendocino. And so the kids begin to feel like, whoa, you know, it's like we're fighting society here on this, you know. And I would like to see the marijuana thing at least come out of the gray zone and everything else, but at least in the beginning with this, to understand that this is not appropriate for teenagers, not this stuff. And it's not the same as what we smoked way back when. Yeah, here and then there.
I'm just wondering if you have any advice when there's co-parents and one of them is fine with the kids smoking and one is definitely not. Do you have any advice on that communication?
It's tough, but one of them is, I think they need an education. You don't know why. Why is it? I smoke weed. Right? He might say to you, I smoked weed when I was a kid. I'm fine. We're doing okay here. The kid seems to be doing fine. What's the problem? And so, in a way, okay, let's talk about the problem. Some of it is the kid needs to get a life. The kid needs to figure out, you know, some of this stuff. Some of it is the biology is changing. The kid's developing at this point. You know, I mean, and then, you know, you kind of got to talk this stuff through and to hopefully getting to another place of moving him some. But I think it's important in some way for the parents, divorced or together, to come together as far as the kid is concerned and begin to put aside their differences or their anger or whatever and figure out what is best for this child. And part of that is seeking some help or learning what we need to do here. And I'm here to say that I think marijuana interferes with the development. It interferes with learning. And I haven't even gotten into what does it affect the ethics of people here and the I don't know, but there's got to be a way now that we begin to normalize is the word, but begin to discriminate and the first discrimination is for these kids. We need to at least come together there on this issue. And parents need to somehow or other figure out how to do that in terms of the kids, and some of it's education. And how do you get, and that's the other thing, is how do you get the education, because half the websites or half the people have agendas, you know, of all good or all bad. It's hard to sort this stuff through. I do think seeing the Sanjay Gupta, the first one, was really worth seeing. As far as talking about marijuana positively and in terms of teenagers. Yeah?
Are you scheduled to do this annually or twice a year?
No, it's just, you know what really brought me back more than anything else? Back by popular demand. I love that. It's so, you know, I'm really enjoying myself at this point. You know, I finally feel like I have something important to say. And I think that people are trying to figure this stuff out. I don't have to deal with administration. I don't have to deal with budgets. I don't have to deal with organ. I don't have to deal with paperwork on here. All I got is just to do my work. So I'm doing it. But should I be coming up here more? Yeah. Should there be dialogues in Ukiah and Willits and all these other places about this weed thing and say, well, listen, I understand this and I understand that. Where is it with the kids? How are we doing with these teenagers here?
Well, I would just suggest that it was known 2 or 3 months out that you would reappear. Word of mouth might get more people that really could benefit from this information.
You know something? Surprisingly enough, we pretty much did that this year. Put out a ton of stuff this year. It's not easy to get people out, but I want to say something. With this right here, this influences the community. This is a start here. So, you know, it's hard to get people out. These guys work like crazy to get people out here. It's just tough.
250 yeah. Postcards.
Yeah.
I don't know where the postcards went, but as I look around the room, I know a lot of people should be sitting in these seats right now, and they're not here. So I don't know. I wasn't aware of it except in the newspaper. I spotted it in the newspaper.
Oh, that's good to know. It's interesting to find out how, you know, what
that's
worked.
That's the only way I knew about it.
Uh-huh.
And that struck my interest. But I really, I don't know how everybody else feels, but I know a lot of people should be here for something like this.
And it's taken time, but it is happening. Did you hear what Dan said about how many people, are downloading it? And look, people are trying to, and the kids also, we're trying to figure this stuff out. And it's really not simple. You know, this drug is, I'm not anti-marijuana at all, and I think it's a heck of a lot better than alcohol or some of these other drugs that are around. But are there issues there? Absolutely. It's not simple, you know, and this needs to be fleshed out more because it's so much also now a vital part of this community's livelihood. You know, so it's not a little thing here, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it being part of your livelihood. It's just that how does that influence the kids? You know, and what's scary is to begin to see two or three generations of growers down there. You know, let's sort this out a little bit here. And so a lot of people aren't here. Some of them can't make it or whatever. Some of them are really stuck in, oh, this guy is a drug warrior and he's against marijuana. So, and it's not easy to break through that. But it's better this year than last year. What I said to the kids this year was, who thinks that marijuana is addictive? More than half the kids raised their hand. 2 years ago, that wasn't true. You know, so the kids are seeing, hey, this is not nothing here. But there's a tremendous need, I think, for more information and more dialogue and more talking back and forth. But not talking back and forth this way. But talking back and forth in a way to figure out how do we work with this in our community here. Yeah.
One of the things that I get often is kids who will come to me and be like, I'm not going to do my schoolwork because I'm just going to grow some weed. I don't need to do this. This is, you know, my people around drive, you know, huge trucks and all this kind of thing. And I'm one of the few people who has luck. I've worked primarily in Willits in, you know, having a dialogue about what can we learn at school that actually will potentially even benefit you in your marijuana growing industry? And honestly, it's always nice to have a plan B just in case. I think that that's part of the intergenerational kind of thing that I've seen spreading. And the other thing that I see with, and again, I don't have anything against people growing marijuana, but the secrecy that comes with the whole entire scene. And so then, okay, I grow weed, but that I don't want my kid to go to therapy because I'm worried that they're going to tell the therapist that I grow weed and then they're going to file a CPS report. And honestly, it sounds light, but I feel like it's a very, very deeply rooted thing that creates it so that just because I grow marijuana, it's us versus the system, it's us. And so then me as a counselor, as a crisis counselor, as a school representative, I am the system. And so then I discredit all of the services that are available to me and support for my kid. I mean, I've had open dialogue with some of the parents who don't feel comfortable, and I'm like, I'll just say it out loud, like, I don't care if you're growing weed at all. And I've had dialogue with many, many therapists in this community who don't care either. Yeah, we care if a 10-year-old is trimming pot. Yeah, that's inappropriate, but we don't care what you're doing with your livelihood. And so for me, I think that that's part of why this room isn't more inhabited, because the people who really, really probably need to hear this the most are the growers and are the ones who I don't even want to be seen at a place like this because, I'm going to have an us versus them feeling about the entire thing. And so for me, that secrecy is one of the biggest roots of the dis-ease that is created in this community. In my perspective, I've been doing this work for 6.5 years in the community, and I really am seeing that play out. So,
The kids learn from their parents to not trust people in the, you know, quote unquote system who, you know, with services are there to help them. You know?
I played the show we did last year twice on KCYX, and both times I got tons of positive responses, but I got a couple of responses each time from people that used to be my friends that were really mad that the situation got brought up and discussed. Because the secrecy thing, like Aurelie was saying, is a big part of the culture. is that we don't talk about it. And so the good thing is, the, you know, the 100 monkey thing. So everybody that's here somehow or other is going to influence the people around them with their information, and it's going to keep spreading. It'll be on the radio. And I agree that it's a solution to a lot of things that are bad about our culture, but it's created this other problem, especially with young people that I have experienced by teaching for 28 years.
Yeah, and you know, the secret, you know, people, it's their private stuff, and it's threatening. That's really interesting, you know, hearing that part of it. And I'm sure that's a real big part, that this is still a gray thing, so it makes people kind of like underground, or, you know, and it puts that on the kids. Boy, that's tough. I don't run into that one. The down in the Bay Area, we don't have that there, but I understand why you have it here. Boy,
Ralph, do you ever talk to the kids about the possibility of psychoactive drugs, maybe bringing out predisposed mental health issues?
Yes.
Like schizophrenia and things like that?
Yes, because what I say is that weed is an all-arounder. It's playing with your psyche in a way that some of these other things do. That's why it can make people paranoid. So, yes, I definitely talk about that and how it affects mental health. The thing is, in 50 minutes, who knows which direction it goes? And what I want to say is, again, it's this place that I at least want kids to have gone home today and to be able to say, marijuana to brain, maybe it's not all, I'm thinking about this, and just have it rattling around here somewhere. That, to me, is a big start on this stuff. And, you know, people are affected by drugs differently. For somebody to come along and say, this is what it does, or this is what you're going to do, it's just not realistic. And the kids don't buy into it anymore. And none of the drug education, I was an administrator for many years, and in charge of drug and violence prevention stuff, and the violence stuff was working okay, but the drug stuff wasn't touching them at all. You know, because we're busy lecturing or busy telling them this is what it is. And it's you as a counselor there, you know, you try to do it, but how people change to me is a mystery, you know. But I do believe that cultures change. But they can change as a result of some intention. And I'll tell you a great example of a change that I've seen a number in my lifetime. One of them is the women's movement from when I was around in the 50s to now. But I'll tell you a big change that we've seen here. We have seen in California and the country a huge change in cigarette smoking. I'd be on a high school 20 years ago, man, and there'd be smoking places for kids, and I was a smoker myself. You know, that's changed. Well, how did it change? How do the kids now, if a kid's smoking a cigarette, it's a little bit weird. What are they, you know, why are they, if they're smoking weed, it, but cigarette, now that's strange. Why would you want to be smoking a cigarette? Wow, they learned something there. How did that happen? How did people start smoking less? Some of it came through education. Some of it came, there was 25-cent tax on every pack of cigarettes in California to go back for education. And by the way, if and when we legalize weed, we damn well better do the same thing, which is that we need education if we're going to legalize this, okay? So that now where cigarettes are at, I'm in a way better place around cigarettes. Yeah, it's legal, but people know a lot about it. The kids, you know what I mean? But we haven't made that change with marijuana. And it doesn't come just from the education. It came from the legislation. It came from you can't smoke here and you can only smoke there. And it came from the advertising. A whole bunch of things where finally the community was saying, this is not good. Okay? Well, we need to figure this out. That's what I'm suggesting with weed, but not running into this place where it's all bad, where you got to fight with the growers or whatever, but be able to, you know, we'll figure it out with the weed as adults, but with the kids, before this thing is, let's get some education in there and let's start to give them some clear messages. And the kids are not getting that. And the clear message isn't, you're not going to smoke weed, otherwise I'm going to, you know, it isn't that. But this is not a good thing for kids to be, you're not going to stop them, you don't have to get into a fight about it, but to be able to be clear with the message, the kids will get it. And the culture will change the same way it changed with cigarettes. But boy, we have a long way to go with marijuana on this stuff. And some of it is, and I think the biggest thing that's interfering with just learning about it is these people that are so locked in that they hear that and say, if you say one good thing about marijuana, one bad thing about marijuana, then you're on their side. You know, we got to get beyond that at this point. And I totally understand why, you know, in explaining it, you know, why you would feel that way around, you know, the larger society. Whew. You know, change, but this is the way change takes place. And to make the commitment, or a healthy start, to make the commitment to say, okay, we're going to put some money here to have Ralph come up to do some of this stuff because this is a concern. That's making it a priority. You know, how else do you make it a priority? You know, where do you go with this stuff? Why should somebody who's living in a beautiful home in the country have to be scared because of smelling of fire or all this? How do we deal with that? As you know, and it's a tough one that you guys are looking at. You know, from so many, from the environmental area to everything else. I'm just here to really say, as far as the kids are concerned, you got to start to get it together here. Yeah.
Do you think in this age group, 12 to 17, there's any level of use where the kid is not going to have brain changes that are permanent, such as the myelination and the extra receptors and things like, if a kid really likes them, they said, what about using it once a month or something? Do you feel like there's any safe level?
I mean, does it affect the brain for that day or whatever? But no, I don't think that it really has a huge impact. And I know that that's not an okay thing to say here, but for the most part, what scares me, in other words, if a kid is smoking, I got 13-year-olds who I know is going to come at some point, you know, and say, well, I smoked marijuana. My first response to that kid is going to be, how did it feel? What was it like for you? What was your experience for it? Because for the most part, you got a ton of kids over here at Laytonville High that I saw today where it's not a big deal in their lives. Every once in a while, they'll smoke, you know, at a party or whatever. Those are what I call normies. You know, somebody who, so people, you have a lot of people that drink some alcohol and have a couple of drinks, and that's it. And they don't even think about it for a while. And that's true with the kids. And I do think that they can walk away from that. As a matter of fact, in some ways, it is a norm to do that. In other words, if some kids are not smoking at all, I almost want to know why not. You know what I mean? What's going on there? So I'm not as concerned that way. I don't necessarily answer that question to kids that way. Okay? Because I say that I still have concerns. This is all of what's going on in your brain. But between you and I, no, it doesn't freak me out. You know what's even better, though? Is if when the kid does it, they talk with you about it. And they share it with you. And I know it puts you in a weird spot here, but if you're reading that there's not a lot going on here, I'm not worried about it. Last question for the cause here, and we're done.
I would just say that to me, everything...
Thank you guys for coming out. This is great.
To me, everything that you've been saying is all about taking out the power struggle and about just being able to have open, honest dialogue, which can be very, very challenging for parents because they feel like, what you said before, the parent has to be the prefrontal
cortex for the...
And so there's a real fine balance there between trying to control and trying to help guide that person through the process. And then I just want to say one thing
Let me just say something about that.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there is a battle sometimes. And I know we want to get away from the conflict, but in some ways it's tough. Because as a teenager, the teenagers are just naturally saying, leave me alone. And what the parent's supposed to be saying is, not yet. I ain't leaving you alone. And that tension, I think, is supposed to be there. I think kids are supposed to be pulling away, and the parents are supposed to be hanging in, and that's just the miserable part of the situation, you know. But so I don't mean to eliminate the struggle. I just don't want to get in. And it's easier for us as counselors to be able to get into that discussion with kids than it is for the parents, because they have a whole other investment in there. What I suggest for parents is, at least when you're talking, to use iMessages, to be able to say, listen, I see that there's weed all around here, you know, and it scares me because I heard these things about it that really concern me, okay? And to be able to share, and then shut up, and then listen, and, you know, and see how it's going to go and have that dialogue. But at some point, parents may have to step in, may have to really get more serious. Or if they're concerned, if a kid is really attached to marijuana, they're going to lie. And they're not liars. They're not unethical. It's just that with a drug, I don't want anything to interfere with my relationship with this drug. So I'm going to tell you whatever I'm going to tell you because I want my relationship with this drug. And if that relationship with the drug, you have a sense, is really threatening for that kid has a strong thing there, then I would go to the mat. I would start to get into some battles with that kid, you know, and say, well, in the beginning, well, you know, maybe you can't stop. I'm concerned here. The kid says, of course I can. Okay, well, let's try it for a week. Well, but in this situation, I would use urine analysis test. I would. Not all the time. But sometimes, if we're going to build trust here around marijuana and I really have a concern, I can't just trust you that way or whatever. This is a way that you show me also that you're not using. It builds trust between us. And you use your analysis test to be able to find that out. And let me tell you, that can really help to have this kid, you know, say, well, no, I can't smoke here because I'm getting U8 over there. But if it comes to that at some point, I'm not against that, okay? But as much as possible, to not get into the conflict about this and really have discussion about it.
So my last piece of, and I use this as a counselor, but I think that any parent could really get online and find and research motivational interviewing, which is a lot of what you've been talking about so far, which gives a context and a framework. And I really honestly believe most parents could do a little research, and the dialogue and everything you've been saying today is right all around with this motivational interviewing process. So if any parents are out there who are wanting to have dialogue with their kids about this, I think that you could do a little research online and pull pieces out for yourself.
And a lot of what it's about is listening. To really be listening, to it gives the kid respect, it gives the kid a little, you know, and to hear rather than this is where it's at. And it goes a long way. This motivational interviewing is a new way of working with addicts where they get a chance to sort stuff out and then maybe see where the contradictions are. Yeah. Thank you guys for coming out.
This concludes part 2 of Marijuana in the Adolescent Brain 2014, Further Adventures with Ralph Cantor. Ralph is a drug counselor and educator from Berkeley who returned to Mendocino County to teach at Laytonville High School and hold a community forum. This program is available to stream or download at our website youthspeaksout.net and is free to rebroadcast upon notification. I'm Dan Roberts, producer of this project, funded by Laytonville Healthy Start Coalition's Drug-Free Communities Project and the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Through our organization and coalition, we are working toward reducing youth substance abuse through a variety of strategies in the Laytonville community. If you are interested in learning more about our efforts, please contact Laytonville Healthy Start at 707-984-8089 or email JAMA at jamashields@pacific.net.